Good morning, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the multilingual discussion on women and leadership. If you're watching on the live stream today, you'll be able to ask questions. And I say good morning again and good evening to some of you. I have with me here three wonderful women leaders in this industry, in the localization industry. Let me introduce them. So first we have Britta Haggard of Semantics. She's the Chief Business Officer, and Semantics is a Nordic market leader, in language technology and multilingual services. We also have Elisabetta Miranda. She is the founder and CEO of CQ Fluency, who is an LSP specialized in the healthcare domain. And last but not least, we have Kathleen Bostick, who is a localization strategist and also senior consultant at SDL. My name is Veronique Euskaya. I am the CEO at Argos Multilingual, and I will be facilitating this coffee conversation, or maybe one glass if it's in the evening for you conversation. Let's talk about time and how things are changing. So a couple of pieces of data that we were looking at, and Britta, you referred to it with saying like 70% of women in our industry, right? If you look in general, there was some interesting article by Chief Executive Magazine from 2018. And what they stated is that half the workforce, roughly, is made up of women. When you get to the C-level, the C-suite, 20% are women. When you get to CEO, it's 5%. So the figure doesn't look too hot, right? And then I picked up another piece of data from the Washington Post, 2019, so recent piece of data, saying 24 female CEO in the top US 500. In 2019 versus 15, 10 years ago. So I'm curious, Kathleen, you've mentioned when you work for the railway and the organization, what do you think has changed, in opinion over this time when it comes to women and leadership?
So I think there's a lot more awareness now. And I really believe what Britta said, I've never considered myself, I should be promoted for being a woman, right? It's all about talent and ability. And that's how I've always hired and built my teams. But the reality is, sometimes you need to, purposely look for talent that may be diverse, more diverse than what you currently have. So now there's 6% of the CEOs in the U.S. and the Fortune 500 are women. And just so happens to be a month ago, Burlington Northern Railroad announced their first woman CEO. I cannot believe it. Yes, Catherine, I remember last
name.
I know. She's there 28 years. I didn't know her. We missed each other, but I was so excited because talk about a transformation. So I think that Warren Buffett is the one who put her in that role, and he's an 80-some-year-old man. But he recognized, and if you look at the stats, more diverse companies have diversity. They have women and men. It's not just male dominated, not just female dominated. And so I think things are changing slowly. But I also think our industry is very different. I noticed a huge difference when I left the railroad and came to localization. Many more senior women in spots, mostly ops dominated. I think that's still the case, very operational dominated. But you also get sales and marketing, and you are getting you yourself, Veronique, CEO. We're getting more women CEOs. We've got Kristen at ULG is female CEO in the top tier. So I think things are changing.
Right. And what's your views, Elisabeth? How do you see, like, from where you're
so
sitting?
So I think, so you have two kind of things, right? So you have women in careers that you are depending, of course, on being promoted and giving the opportunity. When you look for it, you have women that are in position, and like Catherine mentioned, you have to purposely look for, because the base of the pipeline of candidates, not because they don't have the capacity. Most of the time, the women don't even apply for it, right? So they wait until somebody says, "Oh, here's the position," right? So here in the U.S., there are statistics that the majority of master graduates and PhD are women. However, so they are highly educated, they are highly prepared. However, they don't apply themselves for the position. Therefore, the more you get to the layers, the higher layers, the less you have people to choose from. So you absolutely have to purposely look for, right? They are there, but you have to go after them. And I don't think that this is improving, but it's not, the awareness is not there yet. Now, when it comes to entrepreneurs, the statistics are even more scary, right? In the U.S., 40% of the business are owned by women. However, only 4.2% gets to over $1 million of business. 4.2. So it's very, in our industry, for example, when you look, it's almost nothing, right? So what that means is that even though women go and open business in the entrepreneurial world, they don't scale. And they don't scale for many different reasons. And when it comes to diverse women of color, what they call them in the U.S., which is Black, Latinos, and Asians, the statistic is even worse. Only 1.7% of women get to business over $1 million. Well, that's where, like, the diversity programs we call quota, but it's pretty much a diverse program. It's where it becomes into play, right? And it's spreading here in the U.S. It's very mature. You have organizations that really emphasize. We have organizations that make a pledge and really make an effort to go look for the women. However, what they have to do when they find women on business, most of the time, they have to develop and make it grow. I'm a perfect case of this. Our company today is a global company. When I started this kind of programs 10 years ago, my company was very little, and I did not have the ambition to make it too big. You don't be what you can't see. And that was not why I'm going to think that I'm so special that I'm going to be able to do. But then when you start having opportunities and start being exposed and having the support and belong to network and start thinking big, and then you see it's possible and then you can do it, right? So I think that's a lot of the programs that exist in the U.S. and now there are over 80 different organizations around the world that are also supporting women on business, and that will change. That will change the landscape.
And we had that discussion actually when we were preparing for this on quota. And Britta, you had some interesting insights on your perspective on that. And I just to give a little stats before maybe we get into this, is that there's about 80 countries in the world that have actually put in place a quota system. The reality, it applies mostly to government or, you know, political sphere, where there's a number of, you know, parliamentarians that have to be elected, less to the private sector for sure. And there's a lot of debate about that. And a little funny one. So I'm here in Belgium, right? And the prime minister is a guy called Alexander De Croo. And he used to go to Boston Consulting Group events, and people would come to him and ask him where, you know, what part of what division he was running. He was going there because, well, he's prime minister of Belgium, right? His wife was actually a partner at BCG. And that actually made him think, and he was a big advocate of quotas. And the interesting things is that I've read some of his articles, and he managed to get some law passed in Belgium, but for the political sphere, he got massive pushback when it came to the actual private sector. So, and I'm curious, Britta, how do you see that whole topic?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, and the question whether quota actually work or not. I definitely think we need to have awareness also through quota and legislation. What I've been thinking about, I mean, in the Nordics, I mean, I think we are definitely known as being the most, you know, progressive in terms of gender equality. I mean, in Denmark, where I'm based, even in Sweden, that is even more regulated. So that also both men and women have almost a year of maternity or paternity leave, which makes, of course, a huge difference. However, there was an interesting article I read the other day, was that in We have around 134 listed companies in Denmark. And actually, there are more CEOs with the main name Lars than there are women in those companies, which
it is a popular name.
It's a common name, however, but just the idea that, I mean, you have a greater chance to become a CEO of such a company if your name is Lars than being a woman is of course ridiculous. And also looking a little bit on stature, even if we have in the Nordics have been early in actually also introducing programs and quota and equality also in the legislation, we can see that it hasn't really changed much over the past maybe 10, 20 years. So the question is also, and I asked myself that, as I said in the beginning, I mean, because we think we are equal, then we don't, I mean, move it further as we actually should. And back to what you said, Elizabeth, that, I mean, it is definitely a matter of both, you know, structural, cultural, but then, of course, also the gender differences. My own world got opened a little more since my 19-year-old son, he has now a girlfriend in the U.S. She's a black woman. And just understanding suddenly a different country, different politics, cultures, and of course also the situation there. I mean, that really opened my world to thinking, oh wow, there is something we need to do here.
Yeah, and just to complement in the terms of the reality here, right? There are the government, it's mandated. However, the corporation are required, Fortune 500 corporation, everybody that gets any money from the government for whatever reason, they are required to report. That's how we start by compliance. Over time, it's still far from being ideal, but over time, the companies, the organizations are really realizing, the corporations are realizing that diversity and inclusion, not only by buying from diverse suppliers, but having diverse workforce, that's a big awareness that it increases their revenue, increases their reputation with the market, because who buys most of the stuff in the world is women, is a man.
Maybe I didn't do the best job I could have, because if I purposely was looking at the career path and the succession plan, where I've been in all places, and said, okay, I'm going to make sure that I hire a certain number of diverse group, so that whenever we're looking to promote, we've got them on the bench. And sometimes you don't have that ability to do that because you don't have enough people that you can hire, right, to how to do that. But when I moved to my next role, I did not have women lined up to take the my role or the VP's roles. And so I left behind a team of men. And, you know, that's one big regret I have, because here I am, a woman leader, and I should have looked closer at making sure we had more diverse people that could fill those positions. And at least one out of the four could have been a female leader. And there are plenty of great female leaders, but you also don't want to just purposely go outside and bring somebody in just for that role. So I think it's more important to kind of groom them, mentor them, coach them, so that they fit in naturally. So I have learned something, a lesson there, and you know, I would change that in the future.
And you know, I think that you touch on the button to say we should hire the best, or we should promote the best. Well, we should not think that the best are only men, right? I think that's where it comes to. And you mentioned, Elizabeth, awareness. You're mentioning, Kathleen, mentoring, coaching, grooming. Any other, you know, advice that you can share with our audience about, you know, how do we change these numbers? How do we actually promote, you know, or encourage women to live in, as Sheryl Sandberg would say, or what can we do to actually start moving the needle?
I personally think that we can lead by example, right? So in at CQ Fluence, we have in the leadership team, we have the majority is women, are women. And again, it's not that I'm like going favorite the women. If everything is equal when we are selecting somebody for a role, if everything is equal, we will give the favoritism to the diverse candidate. Whatever the diverse candidate is, does not necessarily mean being a woman, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we don't do that, and so nobody will, right? So if we as women, if we don't take one, pull another one with us, like Catherine just said, nobody, nothing gonna change. So I think that having purposefully looking in creating a pipeline is extremely important. And serving as an example, one of the things, so I belong, I'm one of the Ernst & Young Winning Women awardees. So it's a evergreen program that they created. It's fascinating because they have, of course, all this data. They have the Entrepreneur of the Year program for over 30-something years. And when you go, you have all these men on stage, right? So there is no women. And 49% of the business are owned by women. How come there is no women there? So somebody, her name is Lisa Schiffman, I adore her. She realized that and she said, we need to understand why. And it's because business, women-owned business are not scalable. So she created this program 12 years ago. And it's the numbers, the changes are incredible. But what they realized, why women business are not scalable, there are five things. You're going to totally understand when I mention what those five things are, right? So women, they don't think big and are bold enough. They don't build the business to scale because they don't think it's possible. They don't develop their public profile. And they are very humble, right? So don't make other people feel inspired by what they do. They don't establish a keen advisor network. And they don't have access to capital for all these reasons. So one thing fired to another. But talking about how can we change, it's to talk more. Like we are doing today, the women that is in the audience, not going to look at us and say, oh my gosh, these women are so much more smarter than I am. No, they said, oh, these women that are normal women can do, I can do it too, right? So it's really being able to put out there and serve as a role model. I think that's extremely important.
You know, I wanted to add something to what you just said. I remember reading about and listening to it, the women coach of the U.S. women's soccer Olympic team that won, I think it was like 1996. And that coach said, you know, he really had to learn to coach the women differently because he had coached men first. And he'd go into the room and he'd tell them, you guys stunk, you're the horrible game. And they would all sit there and go, he's not talking about me. He must be talking about the other guys. I know I was brilliant, right? But then he said the same thing to the women. Every one of them personalized it, would shrink and be like, oh my gosh, I did a terrible job. So when you go back to the confidence building, you know, that's where you do need to, lead and coach and mentor differently for women because we are building confidence. And even in applying for jobs, you know, I've read statistics that said if women don't meet at least 80 to 90% of the qualifications for a job, they do not apply. Where men, if they've met 50%, they will apply. So we have to, you know, change the mentality of women and build our and that goes back to your other topic. I'm a little jumped in there, Veronique, on the imposter syndrome, right? Building our confidence.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that all the programs and the structures in place, we need to really take ownership of our own CVs as well. And we need to promote ourselves. And that is where, even if we have the, let's say, the platform, we need to help our employees, female employees, to actually take the opportunity. As you said, Elizabeth, we are not asking for the job. We are given the job. So So if we could change that, I think it would make a huge difference.
Yeah, and let's dwell a little bit on that confidence aspect, because I find that really interesting. So you take men leaving university, or young men leaving universities, about just short of 60% will negotiate their first salary versus 7% of the women. So why? Why do you think, you know, we're talking, there's no molding, there's the, of course, the education, right? And there's a culture, because we touched a little bit about the culture. But why do you think that is? This confidence is not at the same level. I mean, even right off university.
I think that we are raised different. Of course, that's different in different parts of the world. But like, for example, the way that I was raised, I wasn't raised to be competitive. I was raised to be cute and nice. So then that's what it falls, right? And if you are nice, you don't ask for a lot of things. You wait for people to give to you. So it's a whole change in mentality, right? So you get, up until today, like kids, boys and girls are raised differently with different values. And I have a daughter. I wish I knew everything that I know now when I was raising her, because I raised her to be very nice to everyone. So, and that means you really don't think about yourself first, and you need to think about yourself first so you can help the rest of the world. If you are this little thing in the corner that needs help, you cannot help, right? So I think that's pretty much the confidence, is how we, the whole society see women and how we value women. And then most famous women are the beautiful models, are not the beautiful athletes or the beautiful leaders of the world, right? So when you see women with too much leadership skills, they become a bitch. And you don't want to become a bitch. You want to be nice. So it's just a whole change mentality that we can change, and we can help the women around us by mentoring, coaching to change.
Britta, but on specifically, you know, you're based in countries, Denmark. You know, like in Denmark, and you also travel to Sweden a lot. And in my book, I mean, I've read about Sweden where, you know, even in school, in kindergarten, it's about gender neutrality. So can you give us a little, I cut you off there, but can you give us this angle and tell us a little bit about that, you know, that where in countries where it seems that the education model has shifted, you know, what's the impact?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's very interesting. You're completely right that we have a lot of, I mean, in Sweden, even they invent words that are gender neutral. Even, I mean, you have he and she, but then they invented a word in the middle that could be a hen. So they're really trying a lot. But what is interesting, what you're also saying, Elizabeth, is that this inherited or the way we raise girls in compared to boys, that seems to be quite universal around cultures and countries, which is interesting. But then reflecting on the Scandinavian society, even if we have that, so when you go to kindergarten, when you go to school, most of the leaders there are women. So they introduce actually a very, let's say, womanish way of thinking into the girls again. I mean, could be something. So we are replicating something in some way or other. And even if we have, I mean, we have the legal support, we have programs, we have all kinds of things. It still comes down to our own consciousness as women and or call it confidence. I think that is a main point. And as you both said, Elizabeth and Kathleen, it is about being an example, leading by example, and not again in opposition to the men, but actually in including both.
And what about, so one aspect that I think also is very interesting, because we talked about confidence, we talked about awareness. What about support mechanism? And what I mean by that is that, you know, your partner, your husband, usually, and not everybody, but of course, you know, women are the ones who have children, and there's still this expectation that they will carry, you know, two or three jobs because they have to often mind the kids and take care of the home. And I think it's, you know, we are starting to see, you know, an evolution, but I'm curious about your take on that, about this kind of balance and also the role of, you know, a supportive partner. Is that also key in changing those numbers?
So I could chime in because I had a bit of a different type of relationship. You know, my husband was home more than I was. So in those early days, I was on the road. Even though he was working, he was actually working, you know, in the city, and I was on the road traveling all the time. So he was doing the doctor's appointments. He was doing all of those things. And what I found was when he was going back to school, and so I went back to school to get my MBA, right? And I still had to watch the kids during the day, and I went back at night. He went back during the day, but all the teachers would be like, oh, do we need to keep the girls longer? How can we help you? Everybody started stepping up to try to help him. And I'm thinking, why didn't anybody help me? Right? And so some of it we create ourselves, right?
Yeah.
But one thing I did want to ask, when you were talking about the gender kind of neutral name, you know, naming and pronouns, right? So in the U.S., and I think it might be globally too, we are naming our kids more gender neutral. You know, you've got Blake, Cody, and Riker, and, you know, and you don't know, which also helps, you know, because when we were talking about quotas, they talk about, you know, neutralizing, anonymizing the resumes. Well, if you get a resume that's like that with a name, you don't know. So that really does help. So you're not at least selecting somebody right away and saying, okay, that's not going to work because I, you know, unconscious bias that it's female or whatever. And so I think that those are helpful as we move forward too. And the last thing I want to add, because we were talking about confidence, is I don't know if any of you read this book. It's very popular in the U.S. And there's a woman by the name of Rachel Hollis, and most of the girls and women that are in their 30s, 40s listen to her podcasts and everything. And she wrote a book called Girls Stop Apologizing. And I listened to it and I thought, no kidding, because you're in a room in a meeting with a bunch of folks around the table and a guy might say, I disagree with that and this is why. I probably would say, I'm sorry, but I disagree with that. Uh-huh. And I have apologized first. Why don't I just say I disagree with that? So that goes back to Elizabeth saying we teach our girls to be so polite. And we do need to stop apologizing and forget that intro and just go, I disagree with that.
So a question popped up, and I think it would be very nice to go back to it right now. And it was, Elizabeth, when you talked about networking and about associations and the importance of that as a support. Could you chime in on that? I think that would be interesting to see, you know, because we've mentioned that there are, you know, boys clubs, and I don't say that in a pejorative way, but, you know, there's the golfing, there's different things, there's like business, networking. What about networking for women?
I think that it's extremely important. It absolutely changed my life. I think network in general, right? And going back to what you said, and because it's tying, you mentioned about the support group, right? The support at home, right? You mentioned the Leaning book, which is phenomenal. And she says very explicit, she only was able to achieve all the success because she had a supportive partner. Just like Kathleen is mentioning, I had the same thing. My ex-husband, he worked, but he was home most of the time and allowed me to go and spend more time networking, going to meetings after work, which normally women cannot do because they leave and then they go home to take care of the kids and things like that. And you miss a lot on the network opportunities. And that's where things are created. I always tell my sales team, say, listen, you go to a conference, forget the sessions, hang out at the bar. That's where you develop a relationship. It's not learning anything. It's being at the bar. So women cannot go to the bar. They have to go home because they have to cook. They have to take care of the kids and all that, right? So I think that going back to the network now, associations, you will be able, and association anyway is good, but women's association, you're going to be able to relate. You're going to see that the problems that you are facing is not only you. So that is not that you are doing something wrong. There is some systemically wrong in society. And then when you discuss, you can learn what's working for other people. And you have other opportunities to then become known. And then when there is an opportunity, even for a job, people already know they can invite you. Or a client that they already know, you already had a drink with them at the bar, then they can invite you. So I think that's extremely important for women to have a girls club. And it's not boys against girls, just to have, if it's possible to be at the boys and girls club, it's even better, right? But it's important that you get exposed for people that have the same kind of issues that you have and learn how they are able to succeed. I belong to at least, I think, 8 women organizations, and I love all of them.
I just wanted to say, you've been doing all the moderating, but I think we should turn the tables on you a little bit. Because, I mean, let's face it, this is your second role as CEO. How did you break through that glass ceiling? I mean, not only did you make it to the C-suite, but you made it to the CEO role.
Well, I realized that I had to ask for it. And I'll tell you why. So I had actually, I could have had a third role as a CEO. And what happened is that I was in an organization, the CEO was moving on, and it was she. She was a founder of the company, and she was looking for succession, right? And there were a couple of candidates, and I put my hat in the ring. And I have been in this organization, not super long, but I came from a much bigger organization. And that's why actually I was recruited to kind of, bring scale and so on. And I applied for it, and it was run by an external recruitment firm. So there were external and internal candidates. And I got pregnant in the middle of that recruitment process, okay? And it kind of got visible, right? I kind of showed at 3 months already. And the woman owner, CEO, said to me, when she saw it, she said, oh, then you will not run for the job anymore. And I just got shocked because, in France, you take 3 months maternity leave and you get on with it, typically, right? But there, she was used to longer maternity leave. And her own experience was that once she had children, that was the motivation for her to move on. And my answer to her was, I'm pregnant. I am not handicapped. That's what I actually told her. But it made me think, hold on a second here. There's even prejudice from women. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the aha moments. That was that. And then when I then got to the CEO job and in Belgium, an explanation, I think it was a result of performance and taking initiative that the board saw that. And the board saw, hold on a second, she's a leader. So I didn't ask for it, but I showed it. Mm-hmm. And then now at Argos, the founder is amazing. The founder, Kimon Funtukidis, I've known him 10 years, and he's been trying to, we nearly worked together 10 years ago. And then a few months back, he said, look, you're coming, and I'm giving you my job. And he said, I'm giving you my job because I think you will you will bring the company to next level. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think a very interesting point that Veronique, you had about that, I mean, women, we ourselves are having this prejudice. I actually think in sometimes we are holding ourselves and each other down. So, and back to also the networking, that is really, in that sense, I think it's positive also with this female networking, because there we can actually allow ourselves not to do that and be explicit about it. Which I find extremely interesting.
And on a general note, I think it's important to ask questions and not make assumptions, right? And get to know the people. Because, it's back to what you were saying, Kathleen, about finding the best talent, not assuming it should be a man, but actually ask female colleagues about their ambitions. And, you know, because to also to what you were saying, Elisabeth, maybe women are not all vocal about their ambitions. Mm-hmm. So that's also a way or a technique, if we can call it like this, to ask and say, okay, so where do you want to be in a few years' time? How do you feel about leadership? I think that's also something that if women are not so straightforward in expressing it, we can bring it in, right? This concept of like grooming and helping your teams being successful, it's not about you knowing it all. So how do you think that, you know, women maybe are adapting to this evolution of leadership? Any consideration on that that you'd like to share?
I think that it's just goes so well with the nature of women, right? So at CTO Floyd's, like everybody else, I think I have the best company in the whole world. And my best company is not the company, it's the people, right? So there's no such thing as company. I have a great group of people. And because we really, really, really emphasize something that Catherine just said, to have fun, right? So you need to be happy. Tony Hsieh from the CEO of Zappos, I spoke him, I heard him speaking when he launched the book, Pursuit of Happiness. And what they do, they pay $3,000 for people to leave after 3 months if they are not happy. We have to do that at CTO too. I love it because I only want happy people around us, because unhappy people make people unhappy. So you want to cultivate this culture of happiness. And the way that you do this is really being the right company, the right leader for the right people, because not everybody, it doesn't fit all, right? So, and I see here that we have to shut up because we are both at the next
one. We're finally comment on that. I think that I'm actually optimistic, because what I can see in general in terms of leadership or management is I think we're really moving away from the one person that's in the top of a company who knows everything. I mean, management today is so complex and there are so many different skills that, I mean, you really need to have a team. You need to have a very strong diverse and a team that is also very close with each other. So I think it bodes well for what we are trying also to achieve together.
I'm going to still grab these 3 minutes we have, ladies, right? Because I have one more. You know, and talking about positivity, I mean, right now the world is going through the pandemic. And I know what it's been like in the US. We're in Europe here, we're seeing like it's not even wave two, it's like a tsunami. So it's causing a lot of pressure on businesses, on people, on mental health. And I'm curious to see, like, you know, during this COVID times, how do you believe that being a woman leader makes a difference? Or can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Let me start. I think again, having this more in general terms, a female quality, so to speak, a compassion, resilience, also having a holistic view on it, especially now in managing remote work, having family. And I mean, it is, I have clearly seen that my female employees are more also resilient to the stress that it puts on them. They are able to be in this situation where nobody has an answer, where maybe some of the mates are more looking for the answer or try to analyze what to do now. Whereas the support of a holistic and compassionate woman is very helpful.
Oh, and maybe I'll chime in a little bit. I mean, what I've seen is that there's Zoom fatigue. There's, you know, like, and it's like we're not at the end of the tunnel. We know that. But I also think that we can use some of these tools to have one-on-ones and to have deeper conversations and to really get a sense of, you know, how people are. And then one thing I always try to do is to know, you know, at least with my direct reports and even further, three personal things about them. And I'm not talking, oh, what's the name of your kids, but, you know, what do they like doing? And, you know, what? And it's not just about the weather conversation. And I think that's how you also building this relation and making people understand that open door policy is just not a word.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you can live, and that, you know, there's always, you know, an outlet to have a discussion and to, because we spend a lot of time in work. That's the reality, right? So as you say, you have to make it as happy a place as you can. And these times are trying. And I think that a lot of people are looking for techniques, if I can say, or advice on how we can make this better. Oh, I see questions coming through on Zoom. So we're done there, and we're going to take a few questions. So one came about saying, thanks for talking about men and women leaders. How do you feel about approaching leadership from a place of equal collaboration? Get rid of the term leadership altogether.
I have an opinion. So I hate hierarchy, right? I hate hierarchy. Like, I think that even though it's a necessary evil because somebody needs to make decisions in different things, so even if you hear everybody out, at the end of the day, somebody needs to be making decisions, right? So, but I believe if I could, it's not the reality of my company, I would have totally flat organization, because you get so much input for people that do not normally have the opportunity to speak, right? So it's not easy. We create CQ now. We have a CQ cough time with Elizabeth. So it's a 15, because everything is about Zoom, 15 minutes call that whoever wants to call and ask questions will. It's not mandatory, it's optional. And it's unbelievable the questions that you get from people that you didn't expect. So that would not be possible if you have this structure that you talk to your boss, and he talked to me, right? Things get lost in translation all the time that way. So I really believe that we are on this together. And if you are, everybody is looking for the same thing, not to make the boss rich, it feels much better. And people are a lot more motivated.
For me, leadership is actually a positive word. I mean, in opposition to management, maybe. I mean, I would really, leadership and management is too different. And what you're saying, Elizabeth, I think you can still have a very flat and equal collaboration, even if you have strong leaders. I think strong leaders, in terms of having someone who's able to actually see the vision and pursue the vision, because sometimes in your daily work you can get lost in that. But for me, leadership and vision is what a leader should do, and it's not in any way the same as hierarchies or management as such.
I agree with you on that one. I think that we've got leaders at all levels in the company, and they just naturally kind of pop out, right? And then you see them blossom and grow. And how do we create more leaders? Because I think we're all looking at solutions. We all want people to come up with solutions. I certainly don't want everybody calling me with their problems and asking me how to solve them. That's maybe the old days. Now you want them to come up with a solution and say, hey, this is what I came up with. If I need to bless it, or if you need to say it sounds good, run with it, right? Because I still believe in hiring everybody, you know, around you. You know, that there's no I in team. It is one big group, and we're only as successful as the people that we have around us. So I agree with that.
I'm looking. I don't see any more questions. Well, let's wait for a couple of minutes for questions. Any other topics that you felt that we could have talked? We had actually, we were discussing, I think, Elizabeth. We're talking about, let me just, I have some extras there. Yes, sorry. Different topic on the new normal. So we're like, I'm back to this COVID times, and I'm just wondering if, you know, from you, like, lesson learned so far, are there things that you believe you're going to change, you know, in the months to come?
I had to tell the team, mea culpa, because even though more than half of our team was already remote, I was totally against, because I hate writing, I hate doing mails, I hate meetings. I love to just get up and go and talk to so-and-so. So, and it's like we had tons of impromptu meetings because we just get up and go and talk. With this new environment, of course, this is not possible. So, but on the other hand, I learned that there are so many benefits, especially, to be honest, especially for women, that now are able, even though I do have a lot of dads that are very happy to spend more time with their kids at home, but especially for mom, like made a real impact. And people are thanking me so much for keeping the company closed and have all these emails all the time. And I said, oh my gosh, this was really important for these people. So yeah, here I am wanting to hang out with everyone. And they wanted to have a life too, right? So for me, it's kind of difficult to think about life outside of the work, but I'm a work lover. So everything to me will like go around. So I learned that I definitely gonna do this differently when we reopen in January. We don't know yet. I will be revisiting our flexible time and flex work model and really rethinking this whole thing. And kind of like I found joy in having time for other things even though I'm not doing, but I know that I would be able to do it. So change that. Now I want to mention the COVID one thing because I saw yesterday, the day before, McKinsey study on women in the workplace after COVID. And this is so scary. It says that 1 in 4 women are considering leaving their careers because of the COVID, like really revisiting everything because they have to homeschool and all this kind of stuff. That could put us in a very, like, in a very bad position in terms of the pipeline of having more women leaders. Like if people start leaving the workforce because they feel that they have a strong obligation with families, with their families. So I think that for all of us that are in a position of managing other women, we need to think about what can we do to make it possible for them to continue being the workforce, but at the same time, face all the challenge that this time is bringing. So it was eye open.
We need to keep the women at the table, right? I have one more question. So a fun one. Are there any influencers you follow or any groups you would share with us for inspiration, motivation?
I think I'm too old for influencers, but I sure think that women in localization, they're doing a great job. And I mean, has been a tremendous success as far as I can see. And it's also very inclusive.
I totally agree with you and all the new chapters they keep opening. Yeah. I think they've done a great job and they really helped. I wish we had that when I was in the early career because there's so much networking that goes on. They learn a lot from each other. And, you know, hats off to Anna Schlegel and the team of co-founders, I think Sylvia and I'm sorry, I can't remember the other co-founder, but they've done a great job. I mean, talk about building a nonprofit from scratch to serve a purpose. And then along with that, you know, Anna, I had the pleasure of writing a blog with her because we both happen to have children that have different abilities or disabilities. She has an autistic son and I have a deaf child. And we talked about our experience and I look at where she's gone in her career. By the way, that's another thing, you know, that's a whole other topic that we don't talk about when we interview. Nobody tells them that you have a child that's got a disability because that's another, you know, Yes. But Anna has done a phenomenal job in her career, rising so high at NetApp, a technology company, which is really, really unusual. So I think we've got a lot of role models in our industry, and hopefully we can continue to share our experiences and mentor the next gen.
So my advice would be more, tips would be more in the entrepreneurial aspect of it, but there are a couple organizations. One I serve on the board is called Duane. is Dell Women Entrepreneur Network. Actually, they've opened the chapters. Now you can just apply for it and participate online. And there are amazing discussions about women in tech, which is what our company, our industry became, right? So when you think about, we're not in language business anymore, it's all about technology. So it's an extremely, extremely good organization. I mentioned the UI, but the UI is a program that you have to apply. But for if we have any women on the business in the call, if you are over $2 million in business in revenue, it's an amazing program that they select. They are now in 40 countries, so it's not only for the U.S. So it's EY Winning Women. You can Google it. That is in the U.S. There's the WeBank, which is the Women Entrepreneurial Business Council that certify women-owned business. And they have amazing conferences. You don't need to be in the U.S. to participate, but there is a lot of opportunities there. Overseas, there's the WeConnect, which is affiliated to the WeBank. They promote a lot of conferences and network around the world. And there's many more, like, it's just like...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, Veronica, as a follow-up, you know, I think there's a number of books that we've all read along the way that have helped us, and maybe we can share some of those resources.
Yes, absolutely.
After the Lean In book... Now it's an organization. So if you type Lean In organization, they have tons of advice. It's kind of like controversial. People either love it or hate it. But even when you don't like, it's good to look at different how people see, right? Not be polarized. So
and it's you can make up your mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. I think that's it with the question. So we will wrap it. Yeah, that's a really good idea, Kathleen. We'll follow up with some maybe recommendations that the audience might find interesting in terms of resources to look at. I would like to thank you so much for spending the time and being here with us and sharing all your insight. It's been fantastic. And Elisabetta, I didn't know you 3 weeks ago. So that's been the bonus that I got to know you, right? In this process.
Maybe I will recruit you next.
Right?
We'll meet you at the bar.
Please.
All right. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody on Multilingual. Take care.